Zedon, thinking out loud in color.
Does he know this is just audio?
October 13, 2005.
I'm Tim Shadle. Hi, welcome back to Zedon. It's been a bit of time here since I've had a podcast come out, but glad to be back. It's been been busy with the end of the summer stuff at home, doing a bunch of stuff in the backyard, a bunch of other home stuff, but also a whole bunch of stuff at work. I've had a bunch of projects going on. It's been a lot of stuff dealing with some accounting pieces, but I've also had chances to dig in, do a little bit of Ruby stuff at work for some system administration style things. Work on some stuff with some of the versioning, some of the build system stuff, as well as the regular Java work I do. So it's been kind of fun. On the side, I've also done some Rails stuff. Really like Rails. We'll have to get into that another time. And some, let's see, I'm also switching over from my PC over to my Mac for a lot of stuff. I've been doing a lot of programming on my Mac lately. I've had the Mac about a year, but I haven't ever really pushed everything I've got over to it. It's mainly been for some stuff, but not everything. Been music and video editing stuff, that kind of work. But I'm really enjoying programming on the Mac. So this is the first podcast I'm doing off the Mac. So bear with me because I don't have all the settings right yet. Today I want to talk kind of about the build stuff that I've been doing. At work we use Maven for our builds, for better or for worse. I'm not a terrible fan of Maven. It's been a struggle for me to figure out whether I like it, whether I really don't like it. I'm still basically on the fence. There's enough of the things I like that I stick around with it. And we're pretty invested into it. We've been using Maven for about a year and a half at work. So that's not going to change at work anytime soon. But for me personally, I'm still not quite sure how I feel about it. One of the things that it does, I think, fairly well is modularize your system. For example, one of the big philosophies of Maven is that a project likes to build one thing and one thing only, please. And it will, for example, if you need to make an ear file, you want to put your application, assemble it from a bunch of different pieces and put it into an ear file, put it on your JBoss server or whatever J2E server you're doing. I guess that's JEE now. You will have a Maven project for your WAR file and a major Maven project for your JAR file and another Maven project for a second WAR file you may have, and then a fourth Maven project for your ear file. And you can assemble your ear from all those constituent parts. And it's interesting because it forces you to separate your code really by the type of deployable that you want to create. So Maven really, I mean, you can do it other ways. You can get around it. But Maven's really built around the philosophy that a project should create one and only one deployable or output to its project. And I find that annoying at times, but I also find that it's been helpful. It's focused our projects around and focused our code really into packages that can support a particular kind of function, and then we use Maven projects to combine them together into something that's a full-blown project. For example, we've got almost 90 projects, 90 Maven projects that are building under Cruise Control right now, and some of them are, you know, dependent on others. For example, we've got an ear file that's built from a bunch of other projects. So all told, we use about 25, 26 projects just for one particular deployment that we're working on. And that one's actually just about to go into production. So that's is the project I've been working on for a couple months here, or been involved with at least. And it's been interesting because we've worked with branching that set of projects. We've worked with getting the build automated together, and it it's worked out pretty well. We've got, oh, I'm just going to guess off the top of my head, a bunch, maybe 10, 15 different projects that are jar files that provide basically only Java, you know, just plain old jars. I mean, it's just plain old Java objects that are for the support for the different applications we've got. And maybe five WAR files. I know I'm missing some. We must have more jars than that, because we got about five WARs, and we got almost the rest of them are jars, and just for POJO stuff. And then we actually combined them into an ear file for deployment. Now, if you ever read the web blog Musings of a Software Development Manager by Ed Gibbs, he's been wondering about the same kind of stuff we've been running into lately. Okay, do you package your jars inside of your ear files? And we did exactly that. And I think that that's what he mentioned on his weblog there. And so we've kind of gone back and forth okay, do we put the jar files in the standard server's library directory? Do we put them inside of a jar? And we finally settled on putting them in a jar, inside the ear file, excuse me. And it's been a difficult decision to figure out exactly where we should put those. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's really a natural place to do it, because there's, in the ear file, you've got things like, you know, WebLogic and some of the other servers that will recognize the appinflib directory inside your ear file, where it makes it a no-brainer. You just drop the jar files in there, and bam, they show up on your class path. But that directory is not something that's mentioned in the specs, so okay, if we put it there, it's application server specific, so now our ears lost portability, but kind of who cares. At the same time, you know, with JBoss, we're using JBoss in one of some of our internal deployments. We use a different application server, a bigger commercial one, for some of our other deployments. So we really do have two application servers at work that we support. So having the compatibility is kind of important to us. But, you know, initially we were just using Tomcat. We had WAR files and jar files, and putting the common jar files in the Tomcat shared lib directory. That directory actually, believe it or not, is meets the spec. If you go to the servlet spec, it requires that all application servers have a library directory where it's access, that those jars are accessible by all the WARs that are deployed in the container. But the problem is there's not any really good way to deploy and undeploy pieces from it automatically without bringing the server down. So it's, it sort of worked, but it wasn't really great. So, and if you're working with JBoss, a server default lib serves the same purpose. I mean, you drop something in there, it's accessible to by all the WAR files that are in your server default deploy directory, and, you know, you can put it there. But, you know, I think even as a bunch of other people have noticed, and I think even Ed talks about this on his blog, I mean, you run into problems where, you know, one developer has copied a library onto their server default lib directory in JBoss, and, you know, another developer tries to run the code, and bam, it blows up at runtime because it doesn't have the required libraries. And so it becomes kind of a difficult mess to try to handle. What we've actually done with, because Maven splits things up into discrete deployments, it has focused it really well. We've got each jar in its own Maven project, which also means we have one Eclipse project per Maven project and one folder in Subversion for every Maven project. But we also have set up, so we've got the jars, we've got several war projects, we've got one ear project, which combines all of them. And the way that we found to bring the jar files onto the class path of the ear is in JBoss, you, in your application.xml file, you mark each of those as modules. Now that's meant really for the J2E client module declaration, but it also brings it onto the class path. So it is something that works, and but there's not a, we haven't found a terribly great way to do that yet. But that's where we're building the ear file, bringing the jar files onto our class path. So the ear file brings in everything we need, all the wars and all the supporting jars, the third-party jars, the jars we write, and puts it all on the class paths above the wars. And then the wars, if they have specific jars that are not needed by all of the wars, or that are needed at the certain at the web class path level, we put those down inside the web and flib directories of each of the wars individually as we build them. And then above all of that, we have an actual Maven project that builds a JBoss server configuration. It basically is we use the maven.xml file, and we have it look at a clean JBoss server deployment. 402, is that what we're on? I think it was 402. And it copies down all the files. And then we've got in that project, in the source of that project, we've got config files for JBoss itself that we've tweaked. So a lot of times, I mean, before this, we haven't really found a great way to keep track of server configuration files. But in this project, we've got three different directories. One's for dev, test, and prod. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. And then under there, we've kind of mirrored the directory structure of the JBoss server itself, and only put in files where in those directories if we're overriding the default JBoss configuration file. So this Maven project, when it runs, it copies down all the folders and files from the example JBoss, the clean installation that it sees out there, and makes a new one below us. And then it copies over all the files from whichever environment area we specify and puts overlays that on top of the JBoss expanded directory structure that it's created. And then it also brings in the ear file that we tell it to and pushes it down into the deployment directory. And we do have one jar file that's for the JAS authentication that it puts in the server default lib directory. And so by the time we're done, what we've got is we've got Maven projects that'll build each of the different pieces all the way up to the JBoss server itself. So we delivered to testing a zip file that has JBoss in it, and they unzip it. We created a little batch file that they double click and it installs JBoss as a service, and it's got a custom name for that service that matches the version that we're delivering. And it starts up, it's got the testing configuration already baked into it from the build, and it's got the correct versions of all the different libraries, and so it actually works out pretty well. One of the things that we've had a difficulty with at first was when we were using Cruise Control, we had all these different projects. And Cruise Control, of course, you watch the version control system so that when you check in something to Subversion, it kicks off a build of the project. But for example, say the ear file relies actually on the binary output of the five different wars and the 15 different jar files or whatever. And so we couldn't get the war file to the ear file to build when one of its dependencies came along and was built. So we got the Maven snapshot dependency and got that working, and then put it out there, contributed to cruise control. They said, sure, we'll take it. So that's it's now part of cruise control. And it's really been a great – well, it's been okay, I guess I should say. It's perhaps not exactly the most timely, but it works out because basically whenever we build a jar file, you know, we check in a file to the cruise the Subversion repository, it'll trigger the build of that jar file, and then when that jar file is done, you know, a couple minutes later when cruise control is checking all of the projects, it'll come across the fact that, you know, five projects rely on that one jar file, and so it'll kick off those projects to be run, and it so it trickles through the system. It takes a couple minutes, or maybe a couple different rounds to kick all the way through all the different dependencies that need to get built. But it works out pretty well. I mean, we're able to have our integration server. You know, we've got, like I said, 90 projects that are running under cruise control. And I think we've got it right now, so the build interval's something like every 10 or 15 minutes it's checking to see if any of those have changed. And so it'll go ahead and rebuild all of our stuff every 10, 15 minutes. Not all of it, but, you know, the pieces that have changed either from a binary dependency change or the source change. And so we're able to get pretty decent feedback throughout the day of whether somebody's broken something that some other team is using. So we've got, I'm guessing, 20, 25, 30 developers, somewhere between 20 and 30 developers that are working on various pieces of our application. Well, multiple products, really. But we're able to kind of keep enough in sync that we know whether somebody's broken something important. And so it's really, it's been pretty amazing to see how using Maven, we've got a pretty decent modular build system, and that I think is one of the big pluses of Maven. Ant, it's pretty easy to have one mega Ant file that globs all sorts of things together, and Maven forces you to factor it out. So there's other things that are pluses and minuses of Ant versus Maven. I'm not even going to go there because I'm a big fan of Ant 1.6. And doing Ruby stuff lately, I really like Rake. So Maven's not going to be the greatest solution for everything, but that is one thing that Maven does pretty well is force you to set up a modularized build system. So even if you're not using Maven, consider taking the time to look through the concepts that come from a modular build system and figuring out a way to set one up for yourself, because it's been a big help. So that's it for today, but hey, if you have any feedback, you can leave a comment on the weblog at timshadle.com or send me an email at z.podcast@gmail.com. That's zdotpodcast@gmail.com. I'll see you next time.